broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's 2025, and typically we all go into it with a great deal of optimism, putting into context what we've been through in the past year, looking to improve what we can. So that's what's within our control. But what about the South African economy? Can it weather the headwinds? Will it be able to resist some of the external and internal shocks that could scupper the hopes of those who think that our economy will do much better? So measuring the current state of the economy is difficult because data is often backward looking and often is revised. So as a result, economic forecasts are frequently wrong, some say. So earlier predictions on the South African economy has been that it's weakly positive, with GDP projected at 1.6% in 2025. We speak now to development economist Phelisa Nkomo to talk to us about the predictions for 2025. Of course, this after seeing an Ipsos survey for not only the South African economy, but what global sentiment has been. Phelisa, a very good evening to you, and compliments of the new year.
Hi, good evening, Sepiso, good evening to the listeners, and compliments of the year to you too.
So do you share that optimism in terms of South Africa's personal finances and the country's fiscus? Are they warranted? Are there the requisite conditions that are at play to support that optimism?
I mean, certainly, I think there are several variables that normally drives positive sentiments. I think in the South African context, we've seen it. I think the first one is the renewed post-election confidence. I think we've seen public sentiments from individual citizens and saying that the government of national unity, the stability they've experienced post-elections, has giving them confidence to move forward. But also, secondly, I think we've seen an emerging consensus between amongst the parties that are within the government of national unity, which amongst the key issues they are addressing and committing to address is the issues of unemployment crisis, economic growth, but also ensuring that there's a participation of citizens in terms of where this country forward. Now, this is coming from the president's statements post the elections. So that's the first thing. I think the second one, what's coming out, which really drives these positive sentiments, it's the issue around power generation. I mean, I think you know the national psyche when we experienced several months of load shedding and that everybody else was actually, the mood was subdued at a national psyche level, but also even at an economic level. I mean, companies were starting to say, we're packing our bags, we're considering, other destination for investment. Whereas the third one was that even at the time we approached the elections, we were growing at 0.1% in terms of GDP. So that's another issue that we've not experienced, the type of load shedding that we have. But one of the key things, of course, that it puts now on the radar, it's how to sustain this power generation so that companies who were really packing or disinvesting in South Africa could really come back and either even expand their operations to particularly support the consensus that has been reached by the government of national unity. Because in essence, you're not going to be able to achieve issues of economic growth or addressing unemployment crisis without private sector being in South Africa. The third issue, which is really, really important, I don't know if you, and I think most South Africans had approached the Christmas from with a positive attitude because we've had two doses of reduced interest rates. And I think the first one, we're saying we're still unsure if really it was really a nominal reduction and we're not going to, or it was just a sentimental. Then the second one was actually quite clear. So that's expansionary monetary policy intervention by the central bank. actually kind of like really boosted domestic demand in the economy. And one of the key things I suspect getting into the first quarter, you're sorry, in the last quarter of the year, central bank is going to pay attention to it's whether its expansionary monetary policy has not led into increased inflation, meaning increase in terms of the prices within the economy. And we need to pay attention to that. So in essence, that's really what has really been driving the positive sentiments. But I think on the back of that is as well is the fact that even in the global economy, I mean, the projection of growth are sitting at 3.1% of global GDP. The impact, of course, of both Ukraine and Russian war seem to be lessening because we've not seen increased fuel and food prices. But particularly from the food prices, what I mean, I often say that, in fact, most of the heterodox economies, one of the key issues we say, we must never waste a crisis. One of those is that the Ukraine crisis, Ukraine war and Russia present an opportunity for much more clearer what we call national food strategy, but also at the same time, food security strategy. But at the same time, it's how you then build a lot more resilient national economy. Earlier, you had one of your guests who was really talking about the manufacturing output and the need to really improve our industrial output. So it actually means that. So the interventions by the central bank means that several businesses now are likely to be firstly having a cheaper access to capital going forward, but also then meaning that the state needs to step in to support from a fiscal perspective, to support the interventions of private sector and this expansionary monetary policy. So there are really confluence of issues, and we should use this moment from a national economic planning perspective to shift our economic architecture towards a structural change, and particularly building industrial capacity domestically and support local entrepreneurs, both small and medium, but as well as a large conglomerate to recover, because we've not fully recovered from COVID. And in essence, we need to be able to build on this possible cheaper access to capital and make sure that we change our trajectory in the next 24 to 36 months.
Pelisa, you spoke about the reform, especially around energy, and that has been pointed to as a reason to be optimistic, Transnet, Eskom, and you also spoke about inflation. The monetary policy aspect of it, I wanted to look at a conversation that has been going on recently around Argentina, what President Javier Milei has done in terms of his commitment to what has been termed draconian fiscal adjustment to change the country, and how people are saying it's more aimed at red tape, but critics are saying it has actually led to greater poverty. But I am interested, is there something that we can take away from as a country? Is Argentina something we should be having a conversation about in this country if we're saying we need some drastic reform and changes?
There are always lessons to be learned, Tepiso, across the globe, by the way. And in fact, you are spot on that you're never going to, no country would ever build a resilient economy on the back of linear or singular macroeconomic thinking. So you need what we call hybrids, meaning that you borrow and learn from different economies. So what Argentina is doing, what South Korea is doing, which is South Africa, is actually classified as an emerging economy. But what South Africa has really been struggling with, actually, is to really move beyond an economic architecture where we're able to beneficiate, for instance, our natural resources, that's one. And then that two, you fundamentally build a lot more resilient small medium enterprises. But also three, you use, for instance, the social protection mechanisms that have been introduced in place to stimulate local economies at a local level. And of course, this is also really compounded as well by the weaknesses within the local government, because local government or local SVOs government plays such a critical role in driving and or in stimulating local economies. So in essence, Argentina presents a very lessons learned. In fact, if you look at the even at the BRICS expansion, there's always something to be learned. I mean, China remains one of the countries that were emerging in developing countries could learn almost everything, because what China is really doing is that it's not only robust in how it interfaces with the global economy, but also it's responsive. I mean, if you look at, for example, now, and I'm just going to mention, you know, one of these global retail companies, perhaps I shouldn't give them free advertising. What they've done is they have eliminated the middleman. What now global citizens are doing, they buy directly from the shop using a platform where they can just transact, buy shoes, clothes, etc., right? And meaning that anyone who used to be a middleman in as far as sales of retail clothes between China and across the world, that has been eliminated. So, and for me, it's a reflection of that robustness, that they are paying attention to consumer demands. They are paying attention to evolution of the economy. But also the second issue, which they're doing it quite profoundly, which is, of course, the likelihood is that they might pay a heavy price depending on what will be Donald Trump's posture over tariffs, is that towards China specifically, is that they are building a resilient economy from strengthening their manufacturing capabilities on what we call consumer goods. Because consumption goods are things that are used on a daily basis. It's a spoon, it's a cup, it's a needle, it's the clothes, it's the lid of something, it's the carpet, everything that consumers are doing, I mean, are using on a daily basis. And when you think about, I mean, from a bag, from a belt of a watch, from a belt, you know, or a waist belt or something. And in essence, what they've done is that concentration of consumption manufacturing capabilities meant that often everyone else in the world is going to move in there. Mm. Now, part of the basic lessons we need to learn is that South Africa has a history of resilience. In fact, South Africa has, comparatively speaking, in the continent, we're a lot more advanced in terms of our manufacturing capabilities. But we're also losing that because our coordination of industrial policy is extremely weak. Police, we are relying...
It's such a pity I have to cut you off at this very important point, and I really would like to continue the conversation, but we have unfortunately run out of time. But let me thank you so much for your insights and just sharing your views on what the picture looks like for South Africa in 2025, the economy, and what will be the important things to watch. As hoping we would be able to talk about the contributors to inflation and what the picture looks like for that. But thank you so much for that.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.